This week, we're marking 50 years since the Attica prison uprising. One issue that drove that unrest was the demand from those people who were incarcerated for greater religious freedom. WNYC's Arun Venugopal looks at the broader fight for religious rights behind bars and the unique role Islam has played.
In the mid-1960s, Muhammad Ali refused to enlist in the U.S. Army.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America. How can I shoot them poor people? I'll just take me to jail.
He cited his conscientious objection to the Vietnam War based upon his religious beliefs. The world's most famous athlete had joined the Nation of Islam. And this had long-term impacts. In Rethinking the American Prison Movement, historian Toussaint Lozier writes that it was not Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, but the Nation of Islam that affected the greatest legal change for people in prison. Elijah Muhammad led the Nation of Islam and had himself been imprisoned for refusing the draft. Lozier said that after his release, Muhammad kept up his relationships with people who were still incarcerated.
Elijah Muhammad does this amazing job of individually answering the letters of prisoners, saying your duty as a Muslim is to sort of abide by the rules, to follow the regulations, but also to kind of adhere to your faith.
But this was often a challenge. Prison officials opposed the Nation of Islam and didn't recognize it as a religious group so much as a political one, with its leader preaching openly against the so-called white devil.
You have prisoners who end up in isolation, in segregation, because they have, copies of Elijah Muhammad's columns or are struggling to get access to the Quran.
All of this was happening during an important demographic shift within prisons, says Orisanmi Burton, an anthropologist at American University.
The population was becoming blacker and blacker. By 1963, New York prisons were majority black, whereas prior to 1963, they were not.
And increasingly, prisoners pursued their rights in the courts. In 1964, the case Cooper versus Pate went to the U.S. Supreme Court. The plaintiff, Thomas Cooper, a prisoner in Illinois, argued that he'd been denied his First Amendment right to practice his Islamic faith.
And it had been dismissed by lower courts who basically were like, this is a crazy religion.
The court ruled in Cooper's favor. And this was historic because it opened up the floodgates for other prisoners to sue prison officials. By one estimate, the number of prisoners' rights cases ballooned from 218 in 1966 to more than 18,000 in 1984. In the middle of this came the Attica Rebellion. Heather Ann Thompson is the author of Blood in the Water, the Attica Prison Uprising of 1971 and its Legacy.
Incarcerated people understood that at the very least they needed to demand their basic constitutional rights.
That's because the law didn't move quickly enough to respond to the demand for prison reform, she says. So prisoners in the late 1960s began to lead strikes and boycotts. The number of uprisings jumped from 5 in 1967 to 37 just 4 years later. Thompson says black Muslims were at the center of this movement. They also represented the biggest threat to the system.
And so even in Attica, when they say we would like religious freedom, what's going on behind the scenes here is that this is very much coded for a real protection specifically for Muslim brothers.
Among the concessions that Attica Prison Commissioner Russell Oswald ultimately agreed to was to, quote, allow true religious freedom.
We see a fundamental difference, and that is really a profound marking of this moment that Muslim rights, particularly for Black Muslims in this country, this watershed moment of change, activist change.
But then there was a backlash. The political establishment pushed back against prisoner rights, and part of this pushback was a sort of systemic cloaking. Thompson says prison facilities became maddeningly opaque, and it was hard to determine which ones actually did allow prisoners to freely practice their faith. Orisanmi Burton argues that the language of specific rights for people in prison is a distraction from the real issue.
They're inhabiting fascism.
And he says that the eking out of certain gains, whether the right to eat a meal free of pork or to gather with others of the same faith, doesn't change the larger construct.
It's a totality of non-recognition of people's humanity.
Burton says during the uprising at Attica, prison officials like Commissioner Oswald negotiated with New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller, in an attempt to shift to the language of reform. It was a deflection.
Prison reform was deployed after Attica as an explicit strategy of counterinsurgency. And part of that strategy was to shift the discourse from war to a discourse of rights. And so today, 50 years later, when we look back on Attica and we talk about it through rights, that's the counterinsurgency speaking through us.
In 1970, the prison population was less than 250,000. That number would skyrocket in the subsequent decades. The ACLU notes that despite making up close to 5% of the global population, the U.S. today comprises nearly 25% of the world's prison population. Arun Venugopal, WNYC News.